the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
It is, 7:41. Gary Breen, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good morning, guys.
We've got to start with the Republic of Ireland and the situation with Damien Duff. So Duffer has stepped away, and what he hasn't said, the reasons for why he stepped away, it's certainly come out in a couple of different newspapers that he was very unhappy with the FAI for even investigating, for looking into the pre-match video around the England game. For anybody who doesn't know what it was a series of highlights of Ireland goals and some historical references in, you know, like a 2.5-3 minute video. And that was it. And then the English Daily Mail said wrote a story that claimed the piece was anti-English, and the FAI investigated. Duffer has walked away because the FAI investigated, apparently, thinking this was complete nonsense. What's your gut instinct about this, Gary? Where does it leave Stephen Kenny now?
Well, initially when I heard the news, which was on Saturday evening, I hadn't heard it for some reason on the Friday when it was announced, but it does initially just makes you think it's another problem that Stephen Kenny has to deal with, and it's something... It's probably the least thing he needs at this moment in time. What's been a difficult tenure so far, with so many different problems that have been out of his hand and again out of his control. And it's not great, is it? I mean, in terms of the preparation for the game in March, everyone's we know that Damien Duff's making a really good reputation for himself as a coach. But the reality is, if you change coach now, just before March, it's not going to impact that much on the team. It genuinely isn't. That's coming from a player point of view. That's coming from a coaching point of view as well, because the template will be set by the manager. It'd be interesting to see who comes in now to fill that void. But certainly, when we look at that, we don't have as many problems as, say, Serbia do in terms of trying to find a manager for this game in March.
Initially, when it happened, my gut instinct was to be pissed off with Duffer for walking away. And then, as time goes on, you're like, well... So he's working with the Shelburne under-17s, I think, at the moment, and there's no guarantee about what his next job is going to be. Now, his reputation is really good, so it's unlikely that he's going to be waiting too long for a big gig to come. But then...
Well, is there a bigger gig if you're a young, aspiring coach? Is there a bigger gig than coaching the national team? We know how much playing for Ireland meant to Duffer, and obviously coaching. He made that decision to walk away from Celtic to take this opportunity. So I agree that... My initial reaction, and I Duffer quite well as a teammate, I've always felt he's a great lad. And I've looked back on in terms of this reputation he's building as a coach, quite proud. I'm thinking, well, good on you. Because he's doing the hard yards. I've said this to you guys before. He's not relying on his playing career. He's going and doing all the hours of coaching, and he's building his reputation that way. And I love to see that type of thing. But I was the same. I was like, whatever your issues are, you're walking away from the coach when the manager really needs you. And I'll be fascinated to see what actually comes out from both of those guys in terms of the statement, because whether or not you're happy with the FAI, I don't know. I'm not sure if that really adds up.
Well, let's assume that that is the reason that he's walked away. The other thing that it does is it reopens the fallout from the investigation, which so far there seems to have been no fallout. There's an urgent statement issued to the English Daily Mail and in response to this. Normally the FAI, like, they bat things away, but in this instance they responded urgently, forced everybody into an investigation, and then the investigation is like, what? What's this about? Nothing.
Well, listen, in terms of the furore that is probably getting over in England as such, and the FAI probably think they have to act rather than just dismissing it, and they do due diligence, review it, and quite quickly find that there's no real case to answer as such. But I don't know, I look at the situation, certainly Stephen Kenny appointing Keith initially as under-21 and Duffer then for the senior, two coaches never worked with before. So he's kind of discarded all the people or the coaches that he's had in his managerial career before. And at the time, I thought strong leadership, I felt it was good that you're getting two up-and-coming coaches like that, two high-profile guys as well who would have been quite critical of the previous regimes. So it was a clever appointment, in my opinion, in terms of getting those type of guys on side. And an opportunity for those two young coaches to work at the highest level, coaching, you know, their country as such, and working for a manager who's... people talk about no experience at this level as such, but very experienced in terms of how long he's been managing. So as a young coach, you want to be around managers who have been in the game that long to learn off of them. So I don't know. It's just not a development that you wanted to see. it really isn't, and it's something that just adds to the problems that Stephen Kenny has faced.
There's speculation about John O'Shea going in now.
Yeah.
That would be, like, again, somebody who is iconic in Irish football history. I think.
A player.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah. And he's not going to play. So I hear what you're saying. But the good thing about John as well is that he's doing a lot of his coaching hours. He's getting it behind the scenes, which I think is important for a coach. I think it's very difficult to go straight into the spotlight. And he's another one who will work hard at his craft. I have no doubt about that. And another good, strong character, a great lad as well, John O'Shea, will be well respected. Of course they will. All these players with their careers will be. But if you can't back that up on the coaching ground, on the coaching field, if you're not a good enough coach, all that kind of respect that you get soon goes out the window.
It's interesting, Gary, that you mention or pick up on the fact that he's not associated himself with some of his former coaches, that he's essentially picked a whole new team and given an opportunity, I guess, to former professionals to really mould their craft in the Ireland setup. Do you think he should potentially go back to a coach that he has worked with in the past if the John O'Shea thing doesn't work out, or if he doesn't want to work with John O'Shea at this point?
No, I genuinely believe he just should get the best man for the job. Now, in terms of the coaches he may well have had in the League of Ireland and certainly over in Scotland, he may think that, no, they're not at the level required. And that might be a bold statement to say that, but he's the one who's working day in, day out with those coaches, and he'll know what is required in terms of coaching what are the elite level players from Ireland in the national setup. So, no, I think he needs to address who he thinks is the best man for the job. Now, if it is one of those League of Ireland coaches again, then brilliant. But I've always a bold statement at the time to appoint those type of guys initially. And certainly it was in keeping with what we, in an ideal world, the perfect scenario is a coach who has played at that level, but it's not the be-all and end-all in terms of whether or not you've been a successful player for Ireland, because you have to be able to coach. And the skill set and the ability is whether or not you can get your experiences as a player into these new young guys and help them in their careers. It's not a case of just telling stories about, oh, I remember when we did this and we did that. That soon wouldn't last very long.
Is the FAI always going to be like this, Gary? Is there a point where you sometimes just got to suck it up? Can you change it?
Well, listen, you want to change it, but I mean, we've seen one of the most high profile things in the world in terms of what happened with Roy and the World Cup in terms of not being happy with the FAI as such or the kind of organisation. But I don't know. For someone who's not within that circle now, I don't know whether or not they've made the necessary improvements. I know that the FAI are trying to. You hear about Niall Quinn saying that they're trying to kind of like do as much as they can when he was there. But I just don't know. But it's another stick to beat them with, isn't it, in terms of if that's the reason why Duff has felt he's had to walk away.
It's obviously he feels like somebody in the camp, because that was something that Stephen Kenny was hinting at, that there was... It's a very unified group. Well, obviously, the management team up until this point had seemed unified. But there was something within the FAI who it seemed like was acting against the interests of our national team by issuing that statement, by responding to the Daily Mail, and by engaging with the story the way they did. Like, maybe that's what Duffer is getting at here, and he's fallen on the sword to try and raise the issue again. I don't know, but it certainly, I wish he'd have said that, or I wish he'd come out and...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, listen, it's still very early, it's still quite raw, whether or not that will come out. You know how it is in football, Jer. These stories and the truth does eventually come out, it seeps out somehow. But you're right, if there is someone pulling in a complete opposite direction, then they need to identify him and they need to get him out of the equation, whoever that is. I've no idea who it is. But for Duffer to kind of weaken the manager's position, not in terms of, but just in terms of the issues, the questions he's now going to face. And as much as people say, no, it won't, and I've just alluded to the fact that changing a coach doesn't have that much of a difference, to be perfectly honest. But when you hear about how excited, how highly rated Duffer had been as a coach, not forget his playing career, which was exceptional, but as a coach by the players, we heard the sound bites coming out that they were so happy with the coaching quality of Duffer and Keith Andrews. This isn't great news for us.
No. And do you want to move on to the FA Cup, or is there anything else on that you want?
Well, just kind of one final point on this, I guess, Gary, is this whole idea of the succession plan now and who's actually going to come in to fill those shoes. If you want to actually develop your coaching chops in this role? Does the Damien Duff departure, I know it's to do with what happened with Wembleygate and all that, but it might also be to do with the fact that he didn't get enough hands-on coaching. Does that reasoning then dissuade you from taking the job if you actually do want to develop your role? Are you looking at kind of one of the reasons here and saying, I'm not actually going to get much hands-on time and I'm not sure if I actually want to step into the role?
Yeah, no, that's very important, Owen. In terms of decisions you've got to make as a manager, in terms of going into a club, there's many questions to ask before you take that job. But certainly something that's overlooked at times is when you take a coaching role. And like, you've got to understand how much time are you actually going to get with those players. And we know that Duffer loves being on the training ground. He wants to interact. That is a big issue in terms of the decision you make to take coaching roles, no doubt about it. I don't know whether or not that's the case with Ireland. I'd be surprised. I think that Keith Andrews, Stephen Kenny, the three of them worked well. I think they were very inclusive in terms of everyone had a specific role, but it wasn't kind of like you just stick to that and nothing else. I'm not sure if I've heard anything like that. No, Owen.
We may as well turn our attention to the FA Cup then at the weekend. Friday night was an interesting one. It's a good place to start. Aston Villa's under-23s up against Liverpool. A little bit of a fright here for Jurgen Klopp, Gary, it's fair to say. Yeah. I think he possibly looked at this and thought to himself, brilliant, this is an ideal way for Mo Salah to bang in four goals, for us to hit the ground running and really get this title race back into our favour over the next couple of weeks. That's not exactly what happens.
No, it's not. And you have to give massive credit to those young players for Villa in terms of staying toe-to-toe with Liverpool for so long. But I think Klopp would be experienced enough, Owen, to know that, listen, OK, we haven't blitzed Villa in the opening half, but the likelihood is they were going to in the second half, and they did just that. I think more than anything, you're looking at scenarios, you just don't want anyone to get injured again as such. But it's a difficult one, isn't it? It's been quite well-documented now that, like, experienced players, the likes of Carragher, are saying this, and unless Liverpool buy a centre-half, they're not going to retain this title. So I don't know. I look at the scenario of Klopp. I don't think he will ever panic and go into the market unnecessarily. We saw how diligent he was in terms of waiting for Van Dijk. So many people at the time were saying, just get a centre-half in. Any centre-half will do. But he wouldn't. He waited. He bided his time. And that was an incredible decision in the end, because Van Dijk was the deciding factor in actually winning the league, in my opinion. But there are young centre-halves available now in terms of the dynamic has changed with the pandemic, in terms of clubs that possibly wouldn't be looking to sell players at this moment in time, but are probably looking at it now. You know, we're looking at the young centre-half at Leipzig, the young centre-half at Lille, Sven Botman, the Dutch guy, who are players that would definitely have been on Liverpool's radar. But whether or not Klopp wants to get them in now, and then suddenly everyone's fit again in the summer, and then he's got an issue in terms of trying to squeeze them all in, I don't know, but I would trust Klopp's judgment more than I would all the pundits who are having their say.
There's a guy on Twitter who's like a football economist. His name is Swiss Ramble. Just this morning, he's tweeted about the financial situation of the top Italian clubs. And their combined losses are bigger than they've ever been. That's the too long didn't read version of it. But they're in absolutely dire financial straits. So if you're a club like Liverpool, who has long-term planning, billionaire owners who have very carefully managed the finances, who've been profitable in record-breaking profit as the team has been successful, now is not a bad time to go shopping.
Well, it isn't. You're right. And Klopp has said in this week, short-term solutions don't really help. And I can understand that. I don't think he is that type of manager. You think of all the recruitment he's done at Dortmund before and Liverpool now. It always comes to fruition later on. But you're right, there are opportunities. And sometimes you've got to be ready to react to it. And not just Serie A there, Lille in France, the French team are struggling. They're not going to get their TV money like they thought. So Lille get, obviously, Sven Botman from Ajax for 9 million, look to flip him maybe in a couple of years for like 30 or 40 million. I think now they'll be looking to do business. We've heard that Leipzig's powers that be are now saying, listen, if the right deal comes in now for Upamecano, I can never say that chap's name, but these are young centre-halves who've got big futures ahead of them. So it is something that Liverpool would be certainly looking at and trying to take advantage of, I have no doubt.
We had a conversation about this on Friday, though, the difficulty. So say you sign somebody now, they've got 14 days of self-isolation, and then they've got to try and get up to speed with the very specific style of play that a centre-back in the Liverpool team would have. It could actually be the middle of February, really, before they're starting to get good game time, and, you know, then all of a sudden the games come thick and fast. Is it worth that risk that somebody takes 4 or 5 months to settle in.
Well, this is the concern. If you look about some of the star players of Liverpool right now, Robertson and Fabinho, you're right, Joe. They seem to take 6 to 8, 9 months to really bed in into the way that Klopp wanted them to play. So you're right. There's no guarantee that even if he gets a highly rated young centre half in, that they're going to hit the ground running. Now, listen, there's talk also of Alaba at Bayern Munich, that he might be available and more experienced, but he doesn't seem like, I know he's been playing centre half, but he's not centre half by trade. And suddenly, if you're in the Premier League, it's a different ask. It really is. So, no, there's no guarantee. And I think Klopp is looking at that scenario. I think you're quite right to identify. I think he will be thinking like that.
There is a world in which they look at a player like Upamecano and say, we can't possibly shell out that much cash on a guy who will then be in a battle with Joe Gomez, for example, for that place beside Virgil van Dijk when everybody's fit, that we actually just can't afford to spend that sort of money on somebody who might actually be third choice centre back for Liverpool, which means that there could be a world in which they have to use Nat Phillips or Rhys Williams as the paper to cover over the cracks over these next few months. Do you think either of those guys are good enough? Because David Myler last week was saying that they should be asking themselves, could they do a little bit more in training?
Well, in terms of these young players getting an opportunity earlier than you would have thought, you probably look at Curtis Jones and you think at 19 in centre midfield, he just looks like such a natural fit. He's just took to it like a duck to water. Doesn't look his age at all. Centre half is a little bit different. I think it's a more specialised position. You make a mistake, invariably it'll cost you a goal. So it is difficult. These young defenders are still part of their development, and it's an awful big ask to chuck them in to a team like Liverpool and expect them to like really hit the ground running. But I don't know, I look at the scenario, you're right. I feel that Klopp probably thinks in the centre-halves he's got, when fit, he's delighted with them. He will be. But the problem is that for Matip, they might look at that situation now, Owen, and think, listen, he's only a couple of weeks away. But the problem with Matip is that, yeah, he may well be, but he's only ever a couple of weeks away from pulling a groin or a hamstring. He seems to really struggle with the rigours of the Premier League, which is so unfortunate, because when he does come in, I think he's been a good signing from Schalke and a free transfer. But just don't get to get those like 10, 15 games in a row out of him.
Can we talk a little bit about Manchester United? The fairly similar situation there, where the defence has got much better this season, and it looked for a period of time like they had discovered a quick centre-back partner for the captain, Harry Maguire, and then Lindelof came back in for the last game and Bailly was out, and I was like, well, what's going on here? Perhaps it was just he's been very injured over the last number of years, and we don't want to put too much pressure on him in case he breaks down. But are we trending in one direction for a partner for Harry Maguire at the moment, do you think?
Well, you're certainly looking for a really reliable partnership. And obviously, if Maguire is the captain, you want someone maybe... I can see the merit in Bailly going in there. He offers that pace, that recovery pace that sometimes Maguire struggled with. Not sometimes. He's very good positionally in terms of getting himself into positions. But if he is caught in a foot race, he's not going to win it. But I don't know. I agree with you. I felt that, oh, maybe you're going that way now. You're with Bailly and trying to work out a partnership that way. But to go back to Lindelof again, listen, they rested so many people in that FA Cup game against Watford. So they'll go into that game against Burnley on Tuesday refreshed. But these are the type of games that they normally drop points in. This is the frustration. I know they're away from home and they look so much stronger in terms of their performances, but a bit of a sobering reality check, I felt, in terms of the semi-final against Manchester. Another semi-final defeat. I think a lot of Manchester United, pro-Manchester United people were getting a little bit carried away. I think City flexed their muscles there and are certainly looking strong again. But there's no doubt, we talked about it so often, I keep repeating it, that you win titles on how good you are defensively. I genuinely believe that. That's why Liverpool will look vulnerable with injury to Van Dijk. And that's why, despite the fact that City are not scoring as many as they are, they look so strong at the back with Ruben Dias coming in.
But he obviously went off injured with, definitely wasn't a concussion. It was just a neck injury the other night. So let's wait and see if he is fit enough to take his place. But are you buying Manchester United as proper title contenders?
No, I'm not. Because of the inconsistency, I think on their day, because they're brilliant footballers, they can beat any team as such. But I think in terms of looking at Manchester United title-winning teams before, the difference is that they do it week in, week out, and I just don't feel that this group do that. Certainly as well, I look at the form that I expect City to go into. Listen, it's very difficult to predict Jay, now with the fact that, you know, you could lose a player at any moment because of the pandemic as such. I know we talked about Aguero was looking to come back and get some much needed minutes into his legs against Birmingham, but he obviously has to isolate again in terms of coming into contact with someone. So it is difficult, but I just look at Manchester City and I never felt that the lack of goals or the fact that they weren't scoring as many goals as we associate with them was going to continue because they've got quality players. Silva gets back onto the goal sheet, goal scoring form again at the weekend. Foden is adding goals to his games as well now. So certainly they win their two games in hand. They go top of the league. I think Manchester City at this stage look like the team to beat.
What would United need to do over the next 4 or 5 weeks to prove to you that they're actually not just playing as individuals and that they've reached a group level that's consistent?
Well, in terms of sustaining the position at the top of the league, I think ultimately it's that Bruno Fernandes stays fit. I genuinely think it's such a transformative effect on that Manchester United team is incredible. And, you know, you think of how often he has played, that they haven't really got enough room to rest him. And I think towards the end of last year, even he fatiguing a lot. Of course he was. He was carrying that team. So I think whether or not they stay up there is dependent on whether or not he stays fit and stays healthy. Listen, they are improving all the time. And Solskjaer deserves credit for it in terms of weathering the storm, in terms of all the spotlight and focus that has been on him if there's been any indifferent results. But they just don't convince me that they're going to stay up there for the remainder of the season. I may be proved wrong. I'm sure Manchester United fans will hope that's the case, but I'm not convinced.
You mentioned there in the context of Manchester City, Ruben Dias, and how unbelievable a signing he has already been for them. What do you put that down to? What are the characteristics you're seeing in Ruben Dias as a centre-back that made him like a duck to water in this league?
Well, I always say this, whatever position, I always think that the Premier League asks questions of you that no other league does, but it seems to be how to cope with them. And if you even hear Guardiola talking about Ruben Dias, he's just absolutely glowingly saying he's just the perfect footballer in terms of he lives and breathes every moment of it. And listen, this is only 23 years of age, but he's a leader even at Benfica. It was a huge investment. And at times we've looked at Manchester City and seen that before on centre-halves and haven't been convinced. But as soon as he's coming, you felt, yeah, this guy looks the real deal, looks a leader. They've obviously been trying to replace Kompany, and that's a massive ask. But this guy looks so assured back there. And more often than not, when I see about a player, it's the effect that he has on players around him. Now, it can't be coincidental that John Stones is now playing really consistently well. I know he made a loose pass again over the weekend and he has that in his locker, but they are even becoming few and far between. So I look at that scenario. I think Guardiola, obviously, we know that he's a front foot manager. It's about scoring goals. But I feel that the lost opportunity, certainly last season, in terms of those defensive mistakes, in terms of trying to beat Liverpool to the Premier League title, certainly the mistakes in going out at the Champions League when we felt that this was their best opportunity, they've been addressed. I genuinely believe that now. They look strong.
One final point then on Arsenal. They got over the line on Saturday night. Emil Smith Rowe with the goal, essentially the winning goal. And he's very lucky to be on the pitch, I guess. If VAR isn't in play, he's off the pitch. He's not going to get the winner for Arsenal. Just in terms of his performances over the last few weeks, I guess, Gary, I think Arsenal fans have probably been aware of him for quite some time. And they've also been aware that that number 10 role has been a massive problem since Mesut Ozil has been frozen out of the club. Is he the answer? Is he a potential player there where you look at the squad and say, we don't actually need to sign in that attacking midfield department?
Well, he's certainly been the answer short term, hasn't he, Owen? And I know that Arsenal rate him highly. Of course they do. And people probably look at the scenario and think, well, where's he been? Well, he's been injured. He's been struggling. That's why he hasn't got his opportunity. But certainly against Chelsea, Arteta's thinking, well, listen, just throw those three guys in. And the energy, the verve with which they've played, Saka, him, Martinelli, that's a frustrating now. Martinelli's got another injury after just coming back from a knee injury. Now it looks like he's got a bad ankle injury. But there's no doubt that Smith Rowe in that 10 position gives you the type of performance that you don't even see from Ozil. We know about Ozil, that intricate passing that he can thread the ball through the eye of a needle. But Smith Rowe gives you that energy, that drive. And so often in these games since Chelsea, you've seen Arsenal defending around the edge of their box and suddenly they play into him. He gets on the half turn and he just brings the whole team up the pitch. And if you think about him, Saka, Tierney even at left back, that's real energy, real verve about this team. And I think it's been a great addition to it. I think he's got a massive future. You think about the quality of the finish even against Newcastle. And you're right, without that VAR, he wouldn't even have been there to score that goal. And obviously it would have been a three-match ban for a straight red, but it was never a straight red once you saw it back. But it's exciting. I really think that Arteta, through adversity, maybe he has stumbled across this. But in the short term, this looks so good, because even trying to shoehorn Lacazette into a 10 position, which he's great as a centre forward, dropping into 10 and getting on the half turn, but he ain't a natural number 10. Smith Rowe looks like a modern day one, certainly.
Gary, one last question. You mentioned adversity there in Arteta. Most of us get better by learning from experience in all walks of life. Like, football has really shot itself in the foot so often by not giving managers the opportunity to ride out the storm and then come through the other side and go, oh, that's maybe I could do this differently the next time.
No, you're right. And I, as much as the headlines were saying, and certainly advice is coming out and saying that Arsenal in a relegation battle. Listen, the high standards of Arsenal, yes, they were dropping way below that, but they were never in a relegation battle. But Arteta, I think he's changing the culture of the club, and I'm glad that they did stick with him. I don't think there was ever any real thinking with the hierarchy at Arsenal that they've made a mistake. And of course, when you are having an indifferent time, everyone says, he lacks experience and stuff like that. I think he's been a good addition as a manager there. I genuinely do, and I think he will get better.
All right. Good stuff, Gary. Great to have you with us. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.